This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying D.C. politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Rashad Young, and as always, I appreciate you guys tuning in. Got another interview for you all this week. I'm super grateful to introduce Chloe Solting. One, this interview was truly phenomenal. It was really cool to interact with people who are very open to sharing different facets of their life. So from a business standpoint, she does work in corporate, a career strategist, healthcare marketing leader. She's a podcast host of Find Your Wing podcast. She's a speaker. She does so many great things. And I think the cool part about doing these interviews is, just really getting a chance to capture people's stories and really understand who they are, like what made them get into the field they're doing or the passions growing up, and seeing somebody like Chloe really discover her purpose and passion through all the different things while also staying true to herself is truly inspiring. So Chloe, thank you so much for joining. If you're interested in learning more just about career stuff, salary negotiations, anything like that, this episode truly is for you. And again, an opportunity to capture an amazing story of somebody else. Her information will be in the link description below. Make sure to subscribe to the pod on your favorite audio platform. And as always, I appreciate you guys. Enjoy the episode. Until next time, peace. Well, thank you so much for joining, Chloe. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Like all my guests that have been on this platform, the first question I got to ask you is, who are you to the world?
Ooh, that's, you know, it's funny because I give a lot of interview tips, and I'm always giving tips on like the interview question of,
yeah,
tell me about yourself. And then when you're asked, who are you to the world? That's like a whole expansion on that question. I am Chloe Solting, and I'd say I'm a multi-dimensional individual. Society tends to put us in a box and think you can be one thing, but I'm a professional, I'm a wife, I'm a dog mom, I help others in their career with professional development, I'm a podcaster, I'm a musician and a singer, and I like to do all those things. And I think sometimes society has trouble recognizing that you can be the musician who's also has an MBA and a professional in corporate. And so I'm all those things, and I'm having a great time doing all of them.
That is great. And that's essentially why I think that question is so important to ask. Like, mm-hmm, when I ask you guys to come on, obviously that's a professional side, but I also think there's more than life to that professional, right? So obviously my follow-up question will be more about how did we get to this space and things like that. But I always think it's important that people take the time to also share their interests, like music, mm-hmm, and dancing and the arts, like you mentioned. I'm a firm believer of that as well, that society does try to box you in based off of what you do and what you want to go and where you want to go. So since you have mentioned all those great things, how did we get to this point where we're helping other professionals in the career space? Like, how did we get to that? What was the inspiration behind it, your path to that?
Yeah. Well, so I've been in corporate basically my entire career. I am one of those people that actually stuck with my degree. I went to school for communication and marketing, and I actually still work in that, and I love it. And so I've been, you know, got a job right out of school in that field, and I've been working for 12 plus years in it, and longer if you count like internships and things like that. And yep. I just naturally started seeing so many friends either interviewing and not knowing how to have conversations about negotiating money, or, you know, even family members asking questions or talking through scenarios. And I was like, I've experienced a lot of this. In my short amount of time, my 12 years, I've seen so many different scenarios. I've worked with different companies. I've worked with like small ma and pa, you know, teams of 10 of us. I've worked for national companies that span the United States. And then now I work for a global company that I work with international counterparts. And so I've just been exposed in my short amount of years to so much and so many corporate politics and just things that I wish that somebody would have told me. And if I can help one person, to me, that's so fulfilling. And so when COVID hit, I knew that I've always wanted to do this. And I was at the time, kind of my side gig and hobby outside of my 9-to-5 was music. I was playing a lot of gigs at bars. And obviously that stopped when COVID hit, and I needed it to stop. I needed that gap because I'd done it for 10 years and people get really demanding. And I was like, I need a break. But I still really like this energy of putting yourself out there and connecting with people. And so I thought, why not take all this experience? I'm already helping friends and family, talking them through scenarios. I'm helping read people's resumes, my friends' little sisters. I'm helping coach, like, what do we say back to the recruiter? And things like that. So I was like, why don't we take it a step further and launch this platform? And so I started, that's when I started my podcast and my Career by Chloe Instagram page. And that's been over the last 4 years, like, definitely different variations of it. I'm still every day trying to figure out, as you know, like, how do you identify yourself and create an identity online? But I've been really enjoying it. And the coolest part is connecting with people like you. Like, we've never met before, and literally Instagram brought us together. And I think that's so cool.
No, social media really is a trip. Cause you just never know who you're going to meet. And I also think that, again, people have stories worth sharing, and especially an industry, what you work in, that people are always trying to find a job. Always need help trying to find a job, and utilizing the services of what you do and what others do, I think is really important. And so, like, my question for you in this space, like, what is the number one thing people come to you about when it comes to asking for help? Is it resume or is it interviews?
I think interviews so far, and I've helped quite a few people just navigate tough conversations. And that can be conversations with any level in corporate up to like your highest executive level, and how to just be yourself and be genuine and open and honest in an environment that doesn't lend itself to that, right? Like, it wants you to be very stoic, a lot of these corporate environments. So how do you stay true to your values and like have these tough conversations sometimes in these environments and succeed and do them well? And I've helped quite a few friends, including my husband, negotiate job offers, which is pretty cool. So, and it's sometimes, you know, it's harder like to practice what you preach, but I've had conversation with friends and they've come back, and one friend came back and she's like, I got a $12,000 raise. I went through all the points. I got a market reevaluation. And so like, that's so cool to see. And it's, I didn't do it, right? They did it for themselves. It's like, teach a person to fish, I guess. But it's like, I just gave them the tool and kind of encouraged them, and they had it in them all along. They have to do the ask. It's like, nah, I'm not going to their boss for them. So I think that's what's so cool about it.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I think the biggest topic I'm always interested in hearing about is negotiating money. a lot of people that I talk to, when I have shared in my previous experiences with jobs, that I've negotiated every time. I don't care if it's 1,000 more or 2,000 more. I've always have tried to have the ability to try to negotiate. From your perspective, why do you think that is such a tough conversation for people to, one, want to have and also are afraid to do it when they feel like they deserve more money and they feel like they're worth more money, or they may just need one?
There's so many layers to that. I think money, it's taboo in a sense, and like culturally, we're taught we don't talk about it. Like growing up, my parents, they never shared how much they made or how much things cost. And when I got to, you know, college age and I started understanding like, oh, bills and this is how it works, I was like, how much is our mortgage? How much does this, like, how does this all work? And it's very taboo. They didn't want to talk about it. So I think like, one, it's a cultural thing that it's just instilled in us. You don't talk about it. And I think it's really hard if you're in a scenario where it's like you like your job and you want to keep your job, but you need to ask for more money. That's hard because I think people look at it as like you're bragging or you're trying to, you know, say I did this and I did this and I did this, so I deserve this. And it's like that potential of getting a no when really it's just a matter of setting up this conversation with your manager from the get-go, and they want to help you, they want to retain you, and like, so how do you build a plan together to get you there? And you can say, hey, I did X, Y, and Z. You don't compare yourself to anybody else, it's just yourself in the game. And how do you learn how to recite that as facts where you don't feel like you're bragging, to have that conversation to say, I did all these things, so I deserve more. How do we get me there? How do we look at this together and create a plan?
Yeah, I think the biggest part is creating a plan. I think, again, I think for me, at least, the first thing people always hear is like, what if they say no? Like, what if they say no? So from your perspective, if they do say no, how do you best go about that?
Yeah, so it's so funny. I was just reading, I'm in the middle of, I'm going to forget the name, but it's a famous negotiation book, and it's written by a FBI agent who he negotiates in hostage scenarios and all these crazy things. Never Split the Difference. That's the book. And he said it's actually better to get a no as the start, because then you can, like, I'm not going to explain this right, but basically when you get the no, you're able to kind of come in and rebuttal, and you get them to just nudge a little and start to hear you out and start to hear you out, versus going through it all and it's a yes and then a no at the end. It's more of a shutdown. But if you get the immediate no, he's like, you can kind of get in and crack. And as long as you can keep the conversation going, you can get to this point where you're like in a negotiation now. And so I think if you get an immediate no, I think it's like, to me, I take that as that's a no today. And so my next question would be, okay, well, when's our fiscal year budget re-upping? Is it, what's the problem? Is it an issue with budget? Is it an issue with my performance? Is there goals that you haven't felt that I've met? So like, let's put together a timeline now and see if I can work towards these achievable things on this timeline, then maybe we can reevaluate it down the road. So maybe it's a no today, but what's that look like 6 months from now, or even at my next annual review? And another thing, you don't have to wait for your annual review. I think that's a misconception. People all the time think, oh, my review's not until another 8 months, but I really need this raise. Like, you can have this conversation anytime for that exact reason. It may be a no today, but because you had it now at that review, they're going to remember that. So,
yeah. It sounds like so much corporate jargon. So, like, timelines, reviews, annual reviews. I think that's those are all important things. But yeah, that's one thing I learned too, was you don't have to wait till your review to have that conversation. Because I think the one thing I did learn is that if I could use a performance-based measure by that review, I have, as they like to say in the corporate space, data to back up my reasoning for that. For the negotiation or the raise or something like that. Now, let's transition just a bit, because you did share a lot about who you are as a person. Your love for music and singing. How do we get into that growing up? Was it like a natural gift that you had? How do we get into that? What do we sing? What do we do?
Yeah.
All that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, my dad has always been a musician. And so I guess you could say I was born with some of that. And I was born with that performer gene where I just loved being in front of an audience because I love that feeling, that rush you get when you're connecting with people and it's like you're sharing something back and forth. And so I would always, he always would play in bands and stuff. He always worked a 9 to 5 and he'd go at night and play bands when I was young and he'd come home real late and I'd be like, where's dad? You know, like, what's he doing? And it was funny because as I got older, him and I ended up playing music together, which was really cool. And I was like, oh, now I know what you were doing. Like, this is so cool. You were out having a great time, making some extra money, playing music for folks. But I actually got into it through theater. So not in the, like, the sense of playing an instrument and being, you know, in a band like I later was. But I saw this. I kind of like to sing in school and I thought, you know, for an 8-year-old, I'm like, I think I'm pretty decent, you know, kids have all the confidence in the world. But I saw this ad in the newspaper in, it was 1998 or 1999. And I was 8 years old and it was for the play Annie. And I asked my parents, I cut it out and I was like, can I audition for this play? And they're like, you know, like, sure, well, but like, don't get your hopes up. You've never done this before. You don't have any training. Like, you might be an extra orphan if you're lucky. So I auditioned and I kind of noticed the director had me get up like a few extra times and sing. And I read some lines and I was like, I think, like, I don't know, but I think it's going good. So I called them when I got done. I was like, hey, I think I might get the part. And sure enough, that director, he believed in this 8-year-old kid who had no formal training, had a huge voice that was like so raw, not trained, and he believed in me and put me up there. And I gaslighted myself through the whole thing. I'm like, I can't do this. Like, how do I memorize all these lines? Like, I'll never be able to. And sure enough, I memorized them all. And I mean, it was just amazing. I'm so thankful because I did theater then for probably 10 years. And like when I got into the corporate environment, just the theater prep of the confidence and the discipline and teaching you how to speak in front of people and kind of speak on the fly, like improv, all that came in such handy. So it was, I'm very thankful to that director.
And giving you a chance. That's usually, I think those are usually the best stories when usually like a raw, talented kid just gets a little push of belief and then it ended up utilizing the skills down the line. Like you said, transition into corporate, I think is a big deal. And so like maybe what if somebody right now is like young in college or fresh out of college and they're trying to get into corporate, what are some tips or tools you think is needed for them to be successful in the corporate space?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I will preface that with obviously my path is not everyone's path and corporate isn't the only answer. Like there's so many wonderful career paths and trade schools and things you can do. I got on into the
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Corporate side of healthcare because, one, I couldn't be like a nurse or a doctor. I just can't do blood. So I think what they do is amazing and incredible. Yeah. And I know like I personally can't do it. So the way I can give back is by being like on the administrative side. And for me, that's like really fulfilling. And I like, you know, the structure that it gives and the opportunity to work with like big companies that have a big name. I think it's really exciting. So for me, that's what I like. I would say just start. You know, we all have big dreams when we're graduating and we're going to be working for this big company or I'm going to be an executive at Nike or whatever it might be, you know, and just you will get there. I started at a local organization that was really small. We had a small staff, but the beauty of that was I wore like every hat because it was a small staff. So I learned so much. And then I kind of kept working for another few smaller organizations where I also wore a lot of hats. And I just picked up so many skills that when I got into these bigger companies and I was interviewing, I could really talk the talk because I was like, I've truly done like all of these things with only a few years experience. So it's all about like, it doesn't matter the size of the company to start. I think it just matters like what you can kind of sink your teeth into, get your hands dirty and like learn as much as you can. Because truly for me, working was like a crash course. I mean, I just learned so much, you know?
Yeah. Learning by through the fire essentially.
Yeah.
Which I think I personally think is the best way to learn. It's because it gives you that experience. And when you are, like you mentioned, wearing those many hats, you are getting all those skill sets. So when you do have a bigger role in a different place, you feel more confident in yourself than maybe somebody else who's just starting. From a personal standpoint, I'd like to ask you guys this. What brings you the most fulfillment? Just in life in general.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. You don't get asked that a lot, you know? But we should ask ourselves that more often, I think. Yeah. What brings me fulfillment is being able to, I think, be in environments where I feel safe to be myself fully. And so, like, for me, that was, like, meeting my husband. I could just, like, be who I am and feel accepted and, like, safe. And so that's, like, fulfilling and finding friendships that I can just be and laugh and goof off and share all the good and the bad that comes. And they just accept you and create this space that's safe. That's fulfilling. Work environments where, same thing, like, I can try things. I can make mistakes. I can mess up. I can take risks and put myself out there and I can be as passionate as I want. And, you know, they're not going to hinder that enthusiasm and kind of like hurt your spirit in a sense. Yeah. And so I think just I'm excited about a lot of things and passionate about a lot of things and finding those environments and those people who like allow you to just be that and explore that. That's fulfilling.
No, I love that. And so from a futuristic standpoint, what do you think is your ultimate goal in this space of corporate and helping out others in the career space?
Yeah. I think my ultimate goal would be, so I still, you know, working for big companies or big brands is really exciting. I'd love to do that in some capacity in the marketing world, but from a perspective of helping people, I would love to speak more and do some speaking and maybe some panels and like really reach people. And I think that would be so cool.
Yeah. What do you think is something that people don't know about you that maybe you hide well to others?
I think one thing would be that I do care what people think. People my whole life have always saw me putting myself out there and being silly or goofy and performing or singing or doing the podcast, whatever it might be. And they always assume like, wow, she must not care what anyone thinks. She's just going for it. And I think deep down, like I care the most what people think. And so for me to do all these things, it's like extra hard because I'm constantly combating that inner voice. I don't know if that resonates with you at all, but.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how do you navigate that inner voice of yours?
It is a daily challenge. Do you have any good tips? I don't know.
So I guess for context about me, I'm not a licensed therapist yet, but I'm in the pursuit of that. So I tell my clients at some point, she just can't care. Like, you know, it's not really I think you got to realize what are you fixating on that's so important. That's one of the reasons why I started doing these interviews in the first place, with like random strangers. Was like, I'm gonna just start having conversations with people and haven't had much communication with them before this, and we're just gonna go for it, because I wanted to really navigate just being my authentic self with people that I don't know. That's just that's the first of it. The second part is, I think, like I tell them, whatever you're thinking of or worried about, you've believed that at some point from somebody else. So like somebody, so like one of my clients, for example, struggles with imposter syndrome, which I feel like a lot of us do. Somebody along the way told him he was not good enough. Or life itself was showing it maybe through constant rejection, whatever. And so that thought he had turned into a belief. So now you have to unlearn that. I also think once I turned 30, it just kind of clicked. I just turned 30 a couple of weeks ago. It just like it cut off because I realized everything that I'm doing is an opinion-based thing. Podcasting is an opinion-based thing. Public speaking is an opinion-based thing. Counseling is a pub as an opinion-based thing. I'm giving my opinion, but also when I meet with these people, they could think I'm the worst counselor in training ever. They could think, "Oh my God, this guy sucks." But they keep coming back, so I'm like, obviously, I'm doing something good. So it's like I have to learn how to find some more belief in myself. And then my experience just working in education itself—that was the biggest thing I had to stop caring about me because I realized it wasn't about me. It was about the kids that I work with, especially. My first job was in higher ed. Well, second job technically was in higher ed. Loved the place, but it was very much like a corporate environment. It's just the environment was very corporate. They were very rigid. I was one of the younger people on staff, and that's why I really feel like I got a lot of that thick skin because they were beating me down at first with just with their own ideals. And me and my first manager didn't get along, at least the first year, because she was a micromanager my first year. But as she got to know me as a person. And I think she learned not to care so much about what is considered right in our eyes. That is one, we got closer, but two, the growth within ourselves happened as well. 'Cause she was talking about things that she used to struggle with. So I think the biggest thing is that we all have an inner voice that we're struggling with, and a lot of people just project it onto others pretty well. So when I hear
Totally.
people talk about micromanagers, I always say in a respectful way that usually more they're probably one of the most insecure people in the job that you work in that. But it's probably because something happened to them before they got into that position. So they have the need to want to control things. So I don't know if that's a helpful tip, but I just learned like you just can't really at some point you really just can't care because everybody has an opinion about you and unless everybody takes the time to know you, it doesn't really matter.
No, that's a great point. It's so true that most of the time, if someone's reaction isn't like what you're expecting it to be, they're just projecting their own thoughts onto you. And like once you realize that and it clicks, it's so obvious, but it's easier said than done to still overcome. But I think I kind of like look at my life too and think like, if I died tomorrow, would I be happy with what I've done? And am I gonna let someone's opinion like get in the way of me ultimately feeling like I did the most with my life? And when I think of it like that simply, it sounds ridiculous to let anyone's opinion get in the way.
I think I have the same mindset all the time. I think I have to go to that far place because in the totality of it, when if it was your last day, the last thing you worried about is one, the meeting that you had, that bad email that somebody sent you and you didn't like the tone. Like, we consume ourselves with a lot of things that really don't hold much power, but we give it the power because it hits us somewhere that we have a belief with still. The hardest thing to do. And the easiest thing to do, but it's very hard, is to not take things personal. One of my favorite books, I don't know if you've read it, I think a lot of people have, but it's called The Four Agreements. You heard of it?
I've heard of it. I've not read it.
Yes, The Four Agreements. I think everybody should read that book at least once a year. It's one of the easiest reads to for I think to consider a transformational book. But one of the Four Agreements is to not take anything personal. And he breaks it down so elegantly. But it's also like as you read it, you realize how much you take on a day-to-day personal. And making that promise to yourself not to take it personal, you realize you have to start over every single day. But the more you keep practicing that repetition, the easier it gets. But I think just naturally, as people, like you mentioned a couple minutes ago, we care about what other people think because we all crave connection and acceptance. That'd be crazy to say we don't care about anybody's opinion. It's just recognizing not to have as much.
not allowing it to have as much power as it could. And that just comes with time and experience, I would say. So a question I'd like to ask you guys also, if you could change one thing in your journey, would you change it? And if so, what would it be?
It's like a yes and a no, you know. It's I'm thankful for the learning, but there's some super painful memories for sure.
Yeah.
I think when I look back at everything that I've done, and good or bad, the one thing I can stay true to myself and say is that I did the best that I could at that time with like the knowledge that I had. And if I've done that thing or had that conversation or made that change, like based on my values at the time, which they can shift, or things that you believe in are important to you can change. But if at the time they were acted out of what my value was or what I thought was important or the right thing to do, then no, I would say I wouldn't change it. Even though some memories are definitely painful and challenging and like, let's call them learning experiences. But I think for the most part, I've never done anything out of spite or so irrationally. I've tried to always do like what's best for me and based on like what I need to be happy. And so it's kind of led me on whatever journey I needed, whatever lessons I needed to learn. I always say if that was like a rough patch or, you know, a rough going with some individual or something, like that's just like the universe saying like I needed that lesson. So I try to take it like that.
And how would you, and how important would you say faith is to your journey to understanding yourself?
I'm definitely like a spiritual person, and I really believe in like manifestation and kind of like what you put out there, you get back from an energetic standpoint. And so that's important to me. And you know,
no, I think that's important, especially manifestation. Just the ability for us to, one, think these very great things, but also to turn it into physical form, and like how possible really is, especially if you believe in it, I think is really important. So thank you for sharing that. And then my final question for you is, what does it mean to be human to you?
So I think about, it's funny, I think about it a lot, actually. But when you talk about, you know, the spiritual world, I guess, and all that, but sometimes I think how short our time here is and how it's like the one time you get to experience during this lifetime. Let's say you live 90 to 100 years, if you're lucky, and you get to experience like all the emotions, all the feelings, like what touches, what pain is, what happiness is. And it may be like the only time like you physically get to feel all that, because we don't know, like I don't know what the afterlife brings. And so human, I try to embrace like even if it's painful or if it hurts, like I'm feeling and like taking that in, like because I can feel. And so to me, human is like experiencing all of those physical things, like those emotions and feelings, and like even having fun. It's like I can go to the store and buy whatever I want, and like how cool is that, like just because you know. And like, so it's taking advantage of like all the crazy things the world has to offer, because it's like our time to experience it all. So
I love that. That's a lovely answer. But yeah, the most beautiful thing in our life is to experience all the aspects of what our human experience is supposed to be about. And it goes by quick. As much as we act like it doesn't, it goes by relatively quick. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking the time joining. For those who can find you on social media, where can they find you?
Yes, I'm on Instagram, Career by Chloe, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn at Chloe Stolting is my LinkedIn. And I like to share a lot of little articles and things like that on LinkedIn. And I do a lot of career development reels on my Instagram. So thank you. And I'm so glad that you know, to connect with you. I obviously saw your platform and what you stand for and what you're doing in the education space with your therapy work and all that. And I thought it was really great. And I thought that we could have a great conversation. So I appreciate you having me on.
No, of course. Thank you so much for accepting the call. I never know what I'm gonna get out of that. Half the time I'm getting, I thought you were spam. I thought it was fake. I thought it was for engagement, which I'm not taking the time to do all that for engagement. There's no way. But I really do enjoy these conversations because, again, I get to meet a complete stranger and get a chance to know a little more about them and also to bring some light to their story and their platform. So when this episode does come out, for those who are listening, all of our information will be in the episode description. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform and check me out on YouTube. This has been another episode of Knowing is Knowing. Until next time.